Since 4 or 5 years, the question has become, "Sir, this is me and this is a friend of mine. We have a brilliant idea to bring a new startup. How can ESA help us on that?" So for me, this is a change in mindset that is impressive, goes perfectly in the right direction. This means that the new generation wants to be in command. They want to be in charge of their own future. They want to create their own ventures. And this is where we have to help them.
Hey, Space Watchers. This is Space Cafe Radio, your channel about trends, great people, and awesome conferences. My guest is Luca Del Monte of ESA's commercialization department. We met during the Spaceport Norway event in Oslo on 25th-26th of October 2022, and we spoke about space commercialization, the next generation of entrepreneurs, the factor of success, and about the cooperation with USPA and ESA. And I'm Thorsten, publisher of Spacewatch.global. Enjoy our conversation.
You are the first head of the commercialization department at ESA, and that's quite interesting. So how does ESA approach the commercial market? Starting with an easy question.
Yeah, first of all, I must say that I am not a fan of the term commercialization. It's extremely misleading, especially when used with an institution like ESA is. It sounds like we are going to sell something on the market, and actually we are not. But our task, our goal, is to stimulate the development of a commercial market in space and to prepare also the development of a new generation of space entrepreneurs in Europe. So that's our goal. Our vision is to make Europe becoming one of the best commercialization hub, one of the best places in the world where to launch and grow a space company that makes sense for our future.
So you leverage best in that case. So what is the key KPI for best?
I can tell you the KPI for the success of our mission. I start always by measuring the level of private investment in space, because this is something measurable. And it's a good proxy of how good an economic sector is. If we manage to attract private investment, this means that the sector is growing, there is a real commercial development possible there. If I measure today the proportion, let's say, of private investment worldwide compared to the governmental spending worldwide in space, that's a grown with a super fast pace, and nowadays we are at more or less at 15%. So private investment represent more or less 15% of the public spending in space globally. When it comes to Europe, the same proportion is 5%. So I measure a KPI of my success would be if I manage in, let's say, by 2025 to make the proportion 3 times higher. So this means to grow from 5 to 15% to maintain the same proportion as a minimum. So this is where we would like to act as a primary leverage. Also because commercial space has different ingredients with respect to the institutional markets. One ingredient is customer, the other is time, but the third one is private investment, is money. If we manage to bring enough private money on that, this means that we will have been very good in being faster, in developing things in a more agile way, hitting the market quicker, and in the end also offering a return on the investment in a quick way. That is the short time horizon and time windows that private investors has.
It sounds very ambitious as a goal.
I must say, Thorsten, it's less ambitious than what you can think, because we are starting from such a small level.
Okay, that's a fair point.
That in percentage, it is ambitious in absolute volume. Let's say it's just the beginning of the story. We will not be happy when we will have done this.
You mentioned on the panel that the European space industry has about 50,000 people working there in this market. That's also something with the growing investment, with the growing activity in the market that we have to put into context here to attract more people into this market.
With the commercial approach, I think that this is really changing. One of the most important barriers that we find in Europe towards the development of, let's say, space sector, a successful space sector, is the lack of talent. in the sense that we have brilliant engineers, but the volume of this talent is very small, very limited. We have difficulties in attracting good talents to the space sector. Now I see an inversion of trend. Years ago, I remember I lecture in many universities, and at the end of the lecture, there were always the same question. Sir, how can we get to work with ESA? So, classical question. Since 4 or 5 years, the question has become, sir, this is me and this is a friend of mine. We have a brilliant idea to bring a new startup. How can ESA help us on that? So for me, this is a change in mindset that is impressive, goes perfectly in the right direction. This means that the new generation wants to be in command. They want to be in charge of their own future. They want to create their own ventures. And this is where we have to help them. We have to put at their disposal all the tools to accompany them in their life cycle of their companies, starting from having an idea, just an idea, maybe an invention protected, and then helping them to build their venture through business incubation, business acceleration, protecting their intellectual property, and eventually also connecting them with the right investors and helping them to get customers and scale up on the markets.
It's interesting that you point out this mind shift. Earlier on, I talked with Christian Hogley Hansen about the scarcity of talents in this market. And he said, Thorsten, when we get talents, then we get them from somewhere else. The amount of talents is not growing, but we might distribute it differently. So with new people entering this market with their new ideas, they're by numbers in this market, but does it help ESA with their own hunt for talents? No, it doesn't. Because these people are creating their own company venture, maybe with ESA help, but you don't get the people.
Okay, that's a fair point. And I agree that we don't get the people in the organization. But what is ESA? ESA is not the end, it's not the goal. ESA is just a tool, is a mean. Our goal is written in our institutive convention and Article 7 of it. ESA industrial policy has the objective to foster the competitiveness and growth of European space industry on the global market. That's my obsession. I exist as an institution only for that reason. Our goal is to development of this commercial sector. Outside ESA, I always have a joke saying that the success of ESA will be when ESA will disappear. This means that it will have grown and created, contributed to the growth of such a strong industrial landscape in Europe that you don't need an ESA to support it any longer. Of course, it's a joke because we will always need institutions like ESA to invest in the long term. And the long term is outside the reach of industry as a time horizon for investment, very short. So technology, as you all know, in space needs years and years of preparations. This means that, let's say, you always will need institutions like ESA to invest in long term, and also in science, of course, science exploration, right. Things that no immediate industrial return.
Then we hope that it will remain a joke and not pushed anywhere else. Space at the moment is getting much more important than it ever been before. Space gets the awareness today, but also, especially since beginning of this year, the narrative of space changed dramatically. So in this new setup, what financing models will survive for new companies, for startups, for around B, round C? I think startups is something in Europe we do quite well, but then coming to B or C rounds, we are lagging. Same time, SPACs have their huge challenges. So obviously not the only model to follow. So from your wisdom or from your background, what is our way forward here?
I mean, that's a real difficult question in the sense that I have no wisdom and nobody has on that sense. I can just contribute with some observation on that standpoint. First of all, I agree with you that the landscape for early stage and seeds and round A is very strong in Europe in this moment. We have a lot of money also coming from the National Recovery Plan post-COVID, but it was already strong, now it's even strong. And I'm not sure that this is necessarily a good news, I must say. When you have too much money for the early stage, for the seeds, there is also a risk of droning a little bit, of doping the market. Okay, so there is too easy money sometimes for the early stage. Let's be careful on that. The point is, indeed, that once they have grown and they are now too big for a venture, the point is they are too small for a private equity or even for institutional investors. So the valley of death that is very well known for technology now exists in Europe also for this type. Now, unfortunately, the short-term solution that many European investors find is, let's go to the US, where what we are looking for, that is a C or a D round, for them is the equivalent of a round A, in the best of case. So there is a lot of liquidity there. So first point, we have to work a lot on raising the attention now of the big tickets. In certain cases, I can tell you that we are far from being there, very far. We have started trying some path, but still they are looking at different type of investment. Space is not mature enough. Maybe in 10 years, in 15 years time, yes, but not now, not today. From the small side, we have seen that thanks to the partnership that we are developing and the investors club that we have developed, some members of this club have decided to join forces. And so from out of 3 ventures of a size of 100 each, 3 of them now have joined forces, thanks to us, and have created one fund of 300 million. We are going in the right direction. So what was before created only through syndicates of VC, independent, now it's a fusion of 3 VC in one. So let's say that's a good point, and I think that we cannot exclude that there will be more than that. Also, just to say that since the moment that we have created this club, from the 1st of June, we are now end of October, we have already facilitated 20 million of private investments that before that club were not even feasible. It's just a few months, it's a small amount, but to see that in perspective, this has a capacity to grow.
As you mentioned before, we start from a very low point here. Talking about the VC market, I have the feeling that most VCs are going just for the me too. Something what is established, what is there, what's proven, somebody else has taken the risk already. So just put some money in. Or do you see the VCs also going for the real stuff, the real cool new ideas that might fail?
There is a risk here. Be honest, and I think that this is also why the members of our VC Investors Club value the fact of being part of that member. The fact is that there is, obviously, let's not hide it, the risk of a bubble. There is. I hear more and more about fantastic new ideas or fantastic new companies that, I don't know, proposes assembly in orbit. They receive money, they receive investments, and this business case is based on another startup, which is proposing space logistics to bring the materials that they will assemble to, which is receiving money. And in turn, his business case is based on another, on a third startup who is maybe delivering payloads into orbit. And all the three are receiving money from it. None of the three has already delivered any type of infrastructure yet. This is very risky. When you arrive at the third or fourth level of dependency in this chain, it is enough that one of the steps burst and the entire castle collapse. So this is the beginning of a bubble. So this is why in our club, we are very keen in providing the good advice and making them aware that if they want to invest there, they can do, but the risk is huge.
And that's the advisory role that ESAR has in the club.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, we do sit in the advisory board of these companies, not in the investment committees. This is absolutely would be a conflict of interest, but in the advisory board, yes.
Let's talk about the new Center of Excellence that will open in a few days in Vienna.
The European Center for Space Economy and Commerce.
I couldn't say it in better terms. What is the aim and what can we expect from this center?
It's a center, first of all, to become a member of this center, you must be just an individual.
So I can be a member?
Absolutely, yes, you are more welcome. But you have to pay 50 euros. 50 for 1 year. To become a member, 50 euros. Okay. On an individual base, we do not want any representation of companies, institutions, whatever. You're just an individual, and we do welcome and want to keep this basis because we want to just people to be free to exchange and enthusiasts or people who want to contribute their ideas on how to develop European space commerce, European space economy. So it's a place to collect new ideas, to develop new ideas and to help also shaping the conditions which will support the development of the new generation of space entrepreneurs. And I insist a little bit on that because this ExSeco will host maybe one or two large events per year, nothing more, so it's very light. It's at least now we are really at the beginning. And one of these events next year will probably be a summer school, which is in conjunction with the new course about space commercialization that we have launching now at Politecnico di Bari on 1st of December. So this is a course that is oriented towards PhD students coming either from engineering or from business administration, who knows already about engineering, who knows about companies. And what they are looking for is what is the difference, what is the specificity of being a space entrepreneurs? What does it take to be a space entrepreneur? What should they do? So we want to teach them and accompany them in the journey from your idea to become a success of maybe the unicorn of today.
It's so on the university, not on the center.
Yeah, but the last part of the course at the university will be in conjunction with the summer school of ExSeco, will take place in the same place, in the same days. So we will bring the individual members of ExSeco together with the student of the course and discuss together. There will be also pitch session with investors. And this is a model. We are starting this as an experiment. If there are other universities or incubators which are interested in this course, we can discuss about how to replicate it.
It's interesting. You potentially have seen that St. Gallen, Nova School and Erasmus School in Rotterdam had this course or space for business coming from the top level European business universities and saying, okay, let's have a look into space. There was ESA involved as well.
Of course. It's my team. It's the same team.
I really like to see that there are also now other courses. As you said, it's not the bubble what gets more air in. We're taking people from the outside and try to assimilate them. Let's shift gear. USPA is getting more and more power. Now being in charge for the GNSS system, for Galileo, now Copernicus, very soon the front desk for SST, and then potentially also the front desk for the secure connectivity. So a lot of power in one institute that is driving the application forward. So how does that coexist, not conflict or interfere with your activity? So where's the difference?
Okay, first of all, it does not interfere.
For sure.
Not only it does not interfere, but it is fully aligned. Let me say. With USPA, we have signed the end of January this year, a joint statement of four institutions, European Commission, European Investment Fund, ESA and USPA, working all together. Actually, I could simplify by saying the implementation of the Cassini Fund actually is way more. I say we are really working together, hands in hands with the USPA, to raise the awareness of investors about the opportunities offered by the growing space economy. So together with the USPA, ESA, my team in particular, I've organized already six events since February. Each of them focus on a different aspect of the space economy. To say that we really work hands in hands. When it comes to downstream, upstream, the most of the things that you have mentioned before, we're really focusing about downstream, so the service side. I would say that if you look at the budget of ESA, 6.5 billion per year, roughly, something like that, the share of it that is focused on the downstream part is really minimal. It's absolutely minimal. We have very important activities that are highly successful, like Artus Bus, for instance, or EOIncubed or Navisp, highly successful, but actually they do represent a very minimal share of the 6.5. The rest, historically, is devoted to the upstream part. Now, we all know that in the space economy, the upstream represents 1/10, 10% only of the 300 billion, and 90% is the downstream. So you may say, but there is where the business is. Yes, so we have to do something at European level. We do this with a small budget. EUSPA is focused on that. I only can welcome this type of development because we should do more to develop the downstream part. However, we have to remember that all this downstream is enabled thanks to the upstream. So without the upstream, and so it's good that we are focusing on the upstream and that the small that we are doing for the downstream is supported and even amplified by somebody else as well.
You ask yourself the questions, what is ESA? I would like to specify this question a bit more. Where do you see ESA's future in the space sector? So let's take the next 10 years. How will this ESA look like?
I can only tell you how I see it developing from my very special perspective of the commercial world. So I will not speak about all the rest. But what I can see is that for years, ESA has been and has played one very specific role. It is an ESA R&D procurement agency, research and development procurement agency. So we buy R&D. Now, there is a shift. Everybody is shifting and going now towards, let's say, the role of customer. We want to buy services. We want to buy products that are market ready. So the first change that I see is I see in the horizon an ESA which is more and more a customer for the commercial market. So less an R&D, you know, engineer who is really verifying all the fine details during the review process, but more like a customer that is just checking that the specification of the service that I'm asking are respected. And alongside this customer role, also a third role I see coming more and more, that is the role of a partner, of an enabler, facilitator, maybe an accelerator as well. I see this more and more coming because in my job, I meet with many companies, in particular startups, who are developing brilliant business and they have never been working with ESA. So they have been doing this without working with us. So companies that have used and decided not to work with ESA because working with ESA, yeah, it's fantastic because it gives you a lot of things in terms of visibility, credibility, technical assistance, but it comes also at a very high cost, complexity, lengthy process, complex procedure. So they have decided to develop things by themselves. Nevertheless, these companies would value hugely to have the technical assistance, the access to the technical facilities, to the laboratories of ESA. So this is a third role that I can see, that is an ESA providing assistance to these companies externally, so they do their own project, and it has a double value. It's a value for them because they get this assistance and this access to the facilities and the technical laboratories, but for ESA, it's a value because by working together, we develop trust. And trust is number one thing when you, as a customer, wants to buy something from a provider. So today, the difficulty for ESA also to act as a customer is that we have trust in very few providers. So by working together and providing an external assistant as a partner, we develop also trust. And then it's easier at a later stage to become a customer. So the evolution of the agency 10 years from now, from the commercial perspective, I hope goes in that direction.
Very interesting view. In a few weeks, we will have the ministerial conference. What can be the impact on your work?
To be honest, I don't want to speculate because let's say it would not be fair and then I'm not really in the position to do that. I don't have the elements. One thing I can tell you is you have mentioned for sure the programs will be heavily impacted, positively or negatively. Either it could be a full massive injection of amounts of money or not. And the national programs as well, they could benefit from a shift of funding or not. Irrespective of all these things, programs in our jargon means way to develop new products, new application, new technology, new service. So that would be affected. One thing that should not, and I don't think will be affected, is the need to develop entrepreneurs, the need to accompany entrepreneurs along the life cycle of their companies. This is a need that, A, will not change, irrespective of whether you are doing these things within ESA or outside ESA, your program. So what I mean is that these accompaniment activities and services that we have to deliver to the entrepreneurs from the idea generation up to having a product market ready and beyond, once you have a product market ready, how to scale up on the market, that type of support will be a must. In any case, whatever the impact is, I am confident whatever will be the final result of the support for this type of services to entrepreneurship will stay, will grow even, because it's a first, and will grow massively. Let's meet after the ministerial and let's see whether you have to pay me a beer or not.
Definitely, and would be very delighted to pay you a beer if we see these positive results.
What a great talk. As we play out this episode after the ministerial, we know that all the programs were signed and the event was a great success. Especially the startup entrepreneur initiatives and programs Luca spoke about got fully funded, even oversubscribed. So I definitely owe Luca a beer.
And if you want to stay on the pulse of the space industry, please visit our website at www.spacewatch.global and subscribe to our newsletters. And of course, don't forget to become a Space Watcher. I'm Thorsten Greening, publisher at spacewatch.global, your independent perspective on space.